Welcome to Lilydale Radio, featuring topics about spiritualism, mediumship, healing, spirituality, and the Lilydale Assembly, the world's largest center for the religion, philosophy, and science of spiritualism. This is Lilydale Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to Wednesdays with Willa. I am your host, Willa White, and this is my weekly podcast show. I typically have a special guest and a special topic for the day, and I am so excited to have with me today Elaine Thomas. Thanks for being here today.
Oh, I'm excited. It's going to be fun.
I think it's going to be great. And I'll introduce it and explain a little bit who Elaine Thomas is. But I first want to explain about the show. There are two ways to tune in to Wednesdays with Willa. And you can go on to blogtalkradio.com/lilydaleradio, and that's an audio version of the show. So listen only on that one. And another more popular way, it seems, to tune into the show would be on my Facebook page, which is Willa White Medium. And so you can go to my page, you can like and share and follow and look at all the archive videos of past shows of Wednesdays with Willa. I've had a lot of great guests on the show, a lot of great topics. So as far as my show, we have a topic relating to mediumship as healing, and I think it's a wonderful blending of mediumship and healing being part of spiritualism. So stay tuned for that topic in just a bit, but I want to explain about Elaine Thomas. You have been a medium for a long time,
yeah.
Over 40 years. You've been a registered medium here in Lilydale. And I believe you're the longest continuously registered.
Yeah, since I think it was 1975 or 1976 got registered, yeah.
So she was a youngin' and still is when she got registered. She's been an amazing force in Lilydale for good and for mediumship. And I know you have a mediumship school.
Right.
And that's the Fellowships of the Spirit.
Correct.
And so they do a lot of teaching and training of mediums. And people who want to do their intuitive development, a lot of times will choose to go to the Fellowships of the Spirit.
Right.
So it's one of the options that's out there for people who are wanting mediumship training.
Well, it's great to be here. And, you know, people talk about being psychic or being mediumistic, and they talk about, you know, one or the other or what it's about. And they often think in terms of, well, what can I do about having these powers, whether it be hands-on healing and doing energy work or doing message work? And for me, it's not about the powers. It's mm-hmm. about service.
Mm-hmm.
And though people have been intuitive and been blessed with these gifts of the Spirit since before time was recorded as we know it, between the 1840s and the Civil War, over 200,000 people died from disease, from wars, and there was no comfort for many of the people. The woman that I studied this work with, Reverend Edith Sandy Wendling, she was born in the 1880s, and she had 7 children, and only 2 of them grew up. Five of them died by the time they were 6 from natural causes that probably could have been prevented in most countries of the world today. And one of them, when he was 16, he was thrown from the rumble seat of a car. And so to lose 5 out of 7 children, and she had been a medium since she was a young child, and she had seen spirit and had things happen, but even for her, that was over the top. And it was not uncommon for women to die in childbirth and all the wars that went on. And there were no blood transfusions, no antibiotics in those days. Goodness knows a lot of the physicians didn't even wash their hands.
Right, that's just going to say basic hand washing.
Right. So there was a need that the mainstream religions were not filling. They were talking about life after death, but there were always contingencies.
Yes.
About what that meant and who would qualify and would I ever get to see my family again. And the mediums were healers. They were bringing comfort to those
yes.
who had fallen into understandable emotional black holes of missing their family, their loved ones. And
a lot of grief. Yeah.
And in fact, in the 1900 census, as cited by Anne Browdy in her book Radical Spirits, which is a wonderful book for
truly wonderful
anybody
book. Mm-hmm.
to read, the 1900 census in the U.S. said that out of 21 million people in this country, 11 million had put down spiritualism as their religion. And so, you know, the first question that popped into my mind when I read that, and I was rather surprised, was, you know, so where did they all go? And why isn't it such a large part of the population today? And there are many factors in that, and one of them being that people got so caught up in the phenomena
mm-hmm.
that the people who were fakes and who were hucksters were able to take advantage of people, and it soured a lot of the public. Another reason is because spiritualism doesn't believe in a central government, at least most denominations don't. And so in some of the more traditional religions, there is a head of the organization, a head of the church or mosque or synagogue or whatever.
And it's very organized, very structured, and has a hierarchy to it.
Right.
Spiritualism, no.
No hierarchy. And if Willa said that, you know, an angel or God or your uncle had spoken to her and told her one thing, and then her aunt had told me another thing from spirit, we could go say, well, I believe what I was told, and you believe what you were told, so I'm going to go start another church. And because there's that heavy participation and belief in direct divine revelation.
Yes, that's true. And so I will frequently tell clients, I'll say, if you weren't going to listen to them when they were here, you might not want to listen to them now.
I agree.
It's about that bond you've established, but I'm just laughing because it depends on who you're talking to, right?
Right.
What information they will bring you and what information you will accept from all of this. But that is something that's very special about spiritualism, that you don't need an intermediary.
Right.
And I typically am talking myself out of a job because I want other people to recognize that they can tune in if they so wish and so desire to connect with their loved ones in spirit. And I think that's what is such a special part of spiritualism. But you're right. It's not an organized thing typically. And I think it's because people are guided so much by their heart.
That's right.
In their religious devotion
mm-hmm.
in that way. So it's more about finding fellowship with other people, I've found, when it comes to spiritualism, people you can talk to, learn with, learn from, and grow. So you know, people may switch associations, but they still maintain that love of spiritualism within.
That's right. Yeah, mm-hmm. and I believe it's our birthright, you know, and the Bible, for one of the sacred books, talks about it, the still small voice within. And that's, you know, we all have that.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is do we pay attention?
That Jiminy Cricket.
That's right.
That's
that Jiminy Cricket voice. I like that. That's good.
And so it's about listening to that soft voice of our soul. Many times I'll tell people, if you feel a fear response about something, you're asking your soul for it. Your soul doesn't give you that kind of response. That is that other part of you that lives in that space of fear. And so you want to redirect to that soft, quiet voice and listen more strongly to that until that becomes the dominant voice in your head, as it were.
That's right. That's right.
But it does give you guidance when you listen to your soul, and really guides you in the ways of your life through spiritual natural law.
And we can do it proactively in the flow of our life, or we can make things difficult for ourselves. And we always can see that with little children, we as adults, when they're trying to do something and you know they're doing it the and sometimes, as with all of us, those little kids will just, oh, and pay attention and do it the easy way. And other times they'll make a face and they'll dig down in with their heels and know they're going to make it work, which it never will, not well. And so how many times as big kids do we do the same thing?
Yeah.
And so these gifts of the spirit that spiritualism demonstrates so often are gifts that we're all born with. I taught school for 7 years. I was a reading specialist, and I worked with children from just about every socioeconomic background and total diverse population. And all of my students, though this wasn't part of the official curriculum, I used to do surveys and we'd write stories. And without exception, until fourth grade, all of those children had either deja vu experiences, seeing angels, having grandparents come to them who had died, or parents or friends, or any number of pets. What happens in the education system in North America, both Canada and the U.S., in fourth grade, most of the right brain activity goes away.
Yes.
You know, playground time, music, art, doing, creative projects rather than rote memory kinds of things. And so we don't lose it as we grow up, but it recedes. Somebody once said, wherever we look, we see what we're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's the world we give our intention and attention to that becomes our reality. So, it's still with us as adults.
Mm-hmm.
It's just how used to we've gotten to not paying attention to it or giving it credence.
That's true. How much weight does it carry in your life to listen to that inner voice? How much weight do you give to your prayers and meditation, walks in nature? How much time do you give to that relationship with God?
It's an important one.
It very much is.
And the people who do, who pay attention, it's not that they don't have challenges in their lives, but they have their toolbox.
Mm-hmm.
That's been updated.
Yes, yes.
And they know when to pay attention. And so they have more tools and more resources to deal with it. Many people have used this metaphor. The same rain falls on the baseball stadium and the farmer's field 3 miles away. One's called a rain game. And the other one is called a blessing because the farmer's wheat is going to grow properly.
This is true.
And so it's like something that you said earlier, it's where we're standing.
Mm-hmm.
It's how we're looking at it that's so important. And the people that have really gone after doing their inner work as they're
crucial.
Studying mediumship and healing and do their inner meditation and their prayer and try to use that as an example in their lives, those are the people that I'm seeing over the years who do outstanding work and are really making a difference in people's lives. And they're not always the most famous ones.
That's true.
But they're doing the work. And it's not just about the flash. And though I call that the carrot, I figure the universe is holding out this phenomena. Oh, look what you can do if you only.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just like the kids with, if you finish these chores, we're going to have ice cream.
The reward system is
That's
very
right.
much in place. But as a medium, you feel good if you are able to help someone connect with their loved ones. And it's kind of fun when you impress yourself.
Yeah.
You're not trying to. You're reaching for whoever's in the highest and best good of that communication between spirit and client. And you know, it's like, oh, that's really cool that I got that information.
That's right.
It's really, oh, I'm so glad that was what really helped to send us into the next space.
Yeah, exactly. And
for me, that's the carrot.
That is the carrot. And to see the light in their eyes, or sometimes to see them use that tissue box because they feel safe enough and comfortable enough to release those tears.
And it's very cathartic sometimes. Not everybody has to cry in a reading. It's not like a necessity. We just have the tissues on hand for those that need them. And there's a catharsis that occurs in that moment. And sometimes I'll say to a client after we're done with the reading, you might want to just go sit on a bench and, you know, find something down by the lake, something where you're alone for a little bit just to collect yourself again.
Right.
Because we've just been through something. And I don't have to say that to every person, but sometimes that's what they're needing instead of rushing out to talk to somebody or to drive again. And they have to kind of honor that process that they've just had an experience, a healing experience between them and their loved ones.
And there are a couple of things that always hurt more when you hold it in than when you let it out, and that's laughter and tears.
Yeah.
And you know, when the tissue box in my reading room goes down quite a bit, my husband will say, oh, you're doing a combination of Barbara Walters and Oprah readings now, huh?
Oh, he likes to tease.
He does.
Funny.
He does. You know, one of the things that that is just not the natural order of things is for a child to die before their parent. And I once read for a gentleman whose son had, I had not met him, he was from another part of the country, and he his son came through, and I saw he was a teenager. And one of the first thing he said to his dad, he said, Dad, he said, if I didn't move when I did, I could never have lived with myself. And let me tell you, it's about faith, because him telling me this from spirit made no sense to me.
Yeah.
I had no clue what I was saying. And the father burst into tears, and he said, stop right there before you go on. He said, my son was on the school bus, and one of his closest friends, she was an honor student, and bullets were coming in to the bus on the way home, and this was in one of the big cities. And he knew instantly he had to move in front of his friend. He took the bullet and died, and she lived. And he said, nobody could have done more for me and for my family than to hear those words out of his mouth, not his name, not anything else, because that answered our why. And that was our son, who was always so courageous. And I was so, like you said, whoa. And how did I learn to trust that? Sometimes early on over the years, and even later on, I would receive this hearing, seeing, knowing, and all of a sudden I'd go, I can't say that. And I wouldn't say it.
You know this
yes,
one, Willa.
Yes, I do. And at the end of the reading, this one woman said to me, you know, I love the reading, but the one thing that I really came to hear was, and it was verbatim what I had gotten, and at that point, you can't exactly say to a client, oh, yeah, I got it, but I was too afraid to say it because it would seem like it was fake.
Yeah.
So sometimes all of us learn by when we blow it.
Yeah.
Because after that, I started paying attention to what it felt like when I had a success in terms of it being exactly what they came for.
Mm-hmm,
and I'd
mm-hmm.
go back inside and say, okay, let's remember how Spirit brought that to me and or how I got that from my higher self so that when that comes again, I'll know I can trust it.
Yes. You're developing a rapport with your people in Spirit, your team that assists you,
yeah.
and you build trust with them. And that is such a core ingredient to making this process of mediumship a healing experience for the client, and to optimize what you're receiving. And a lot of times you're like, ah, this doesn't make any sense to me, but blah, 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 blah. And they're like, yeah, makes total sense. Like, okay, they're not my people or my situations.
Right.
So you sometimes you're just like, I can't believe I have to say that.
And on another level, I think one of the greatest gifts I ever received from a client was this young man came for reading, and I think you've heard this story before. Before he sat down, he said, Elaine, he said, I just have to tell you a story before you start. And so he said he was 23 at the time. He had just graduated from college. And he said when he was 9, his parents and his grandmother had brought him to Lilydale. And they were out at one of the outdoor message services at the stump. And he said, you gave me a message about how I had been bullied at school and that I didn't want to go back. And that he said that my best friend, I could see his friend ran away. And I said, you haven't forgiven him. And I kept waiting, and there was no spirit loved one identifying themselves. And, you know, we only have a couple of minutes to get messages out there.
I know, it's such a little narrow window.
And so I was talking as fast as I could, and spirit talked to him, you know, gave me the message, but nobody was identifying who they were, and said that, you know, he needed to forgive, essentially, his friend and go back to school and to stand up to the bullies, and I don't remember how I said it. So he told me this, and he said, when you were done, he said, I was so glad that you didn't bring a dead person because I didn't know any dead people, and the idea of that scared me.
Yeah.
And he said, but I turned to my mom and dad and said, would you write that lady's name down? Because when I grow up and I have my own money, I'm going to go to her for a reading. You know, he's telling me this. And I'm trying to be professional, and I'm tearing up a little bit. I'm so moved. And so, you know, I really thanked him. And he showed me the piece of paper with my name written on it. He said, this piece of paper has been in my sock drawer for all these years. From 9 to 23. How's that?
Wow.
And now here's that next level. That next level was during the reading. His grandmother came through, who had not been in spirit when
right.
he had been 9.
Right.
And, you know, so some people think it's all about identifying spirit loved ones. No, it's about healing whatever form that takes and trusting in God and in spirit that they're going to bring through not what I want to give them, but what that person needs. And that's always my intention when I'm working with
Beautiful.
Someone. You know, Spirit, bring me what they most need, not what I think I might want to tell them.
So sometimes it's their angels giving you that information.
Exactly.
And I had been reading about Padre Pio, and he, when he was in confessionals with people, he would talk to their guardian angels, and their guardian angels would tell them tell Padre Pio what was up with these people.
Wow, that's
And
awesome.
So there he is in confessional, and he'll be like, I know that you have been doing this or that you need guidance about this because your guardian angel has been telling me.
That's right.
That's mediumship.
That's right.
Right there.
That's right.
In a Catholic confessional. You know?
That's right.
And it wasn't their loved one in spirit telling him that. The angels. So sometimes it's angels that convey information.
That's right. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
I totally agree.
Beautiful.
Yeah, and he conveyed the healing message.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Boy, I bet it knocked some of their socks off.
I'm sure it's another reason why they raise him up in that sense. But I think when people, when you're talking to someone that you can feel cares about you very deeply, they can go into that spiritual space of greater understanding that takes them into their higher self, that kind of consciousness, the super consciousness, as it were, and that's where some of that information can come from.
That's right. And we all have those gifts of the Spirit.
Yes. We all have gifts of the Spirit. And I'm so glad, because Elaine loves to talk about gifts of the Spirit. And I think that it's important people recognize mediumship and healing are gifts of the Spirit. And there are even things that Jesus said that we could do. He can do it, and we can do it too.
That's right.
And that's something that a lot of people have missed when they have been taught things from the Bible.
Right.
And
also,
so it's good that it gets mentioned.
Some of the people who are involved in metaphysical and spiritualist things have missed.
Mm-hmm.
Because
true.
Some people, you know, it's what I call the full circle of extremism. I have an uncle who I love dearly, who's in his 90s now, and I'm not going to say which he started with, but he was an extremist in his political views way to the edge when he was a teenager. And then slowly over the years, he came full circle and absolutely abhors that philosophy and is now more radical than the most radical people on any television station. And he's 93. And so...
You could teach an old dog new tricks.
You know, it's more like there's... My dad used to say, everything in moderation, including moderation, so you give yourself some human wiggle room.
Yes.
And so even especially in religion, because there's so many things that are said and done in the name of God or the angels, which they have to have a great sense of humor, I'll say. But it's about finding that midpoint.
Yeah.
Where we can be still enough to hear that voice, whether it be the angels or your Uncle Bert.
Bert. So I do feel it's wonderful that, as children, they kind of get into that intuitive space, and they're very much in that moment of now. There's that power of now that they embrace. And when it comes to mediumship and really training and fine-tuning your gifts of the Spirit, even, you know, spiritual healing like we do in churches, it gets into that space of the moment of now. Like all of your energy and focus happens in that moment. So when I'm in a reading with a client, I am all in and time goes so fast.
Yeah.
It blinks by. And so we're just like, how did that hour go by so fast? It felt like maybe 10 minutes. But you become completely in that moment. So imagine if we were to do that in other areas of our life too, not just with the mediumship, not just with the healing, and not just playing with kids, but that idea of what if we could do that
all the time.
All the time.
And still be grounded in our body.
And still be grounded, yes, because you do meet some woo-woo people.
Yes.
Like... Whoa.
No meditation CDs or things on your phone when you're driving.
That's right. That's right. You need to, as I've said this before, chop wood, carry water. You still have to do some of those mundane things, but you can as much as possible embody prayer in those moments.
There was somebody who came to me for a reading once who was and is very well known. We'll leave it at that. And they sat down in the armchair in my reading room and kind of folded themselves into a lotus position. And I took a breath and I said, okay, I said my prayer. And I started speaking. And this person said, wait, time out. I came here because I heard you give spiritual readings about people's spiritual path, and that's what I'm here to find out. And all I could think of was Snow White and mirror, mirror on the wall from her stepmother, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, but where you are is your spiritual walk and how you deal with it. Oh, no, no. And this person gave me all this fluffy pie in the sky, and I thought, you know, and people think we're flaky. I'm taking you backstage for a minute here. And then I looked at him and sincerely said, you know, where you are, your challenges, your daily life, your success, your family, your friends, how you treat people, this is your spiritual walk. No, that's not what I came to hear. And I said, well, then you came to the wrong person.
Right.
And I very kindly ushered him to the door, would not take any payment, and which also upset him. Well, I always pay for what, and I said, not here. I said, you have run your business your way, and I run my spiritual practice my way.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a wonderful person. And at the same time, you know, our spiritual path is right where we are.
Yes, yes.
What we've created.
Mm-hmm. And we're just supposed to be in that particular moment. And I think that sometimes people want to anticipate what's to come so that they can somehow better prepare
right.
for that. Well, unless you're getting your own premonitions and intuitions along that path, don't expect it from someone else, because all they can do is offer you what might be a higher probability of outcome anyway. You ultimately have free will. You're the one in charge of manifesting your life. And so while there may be patterns that or themes in a person's life, you have at any given moment the opportunity to switch out of that unhealthy pattern of reaction into a healthier one, or wherever it is you need to be more in the awareness of it. But it's about enjoying little simple pleasures of life, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
It's not saying, I want to be so goal-oriented that I miss the journey
exactly.
along the way. So I think it's good that you gave him the message that you did.
Yeah. And he walked out with a smile. But, you
That's
know.
Good.
You know, when one of our sons was about 2.5 or 3, one day he says to me, Mommy, I want to go home. I said, we are home. And the fear in that moment as a mother, knowing what he meant,
yeah.
I knew, you know, he said, Mama, I miss being in God like I was when I was in your tummy.
Yeah.
And part of me was like jumping for joy, you know, that he remembered that connection. And, of course, the other part of me is going, oh, my God.
Yeah, how can we compare?
And so I said to him, I said, God sent you here to have an experience. And I said, when you're a really old man, after you've done all the things you came to do that God sent you to do and you decided to do, I said, you're going to get to go back and be in God.
Mm-hmm.
And he went, oh, good. Last time it ever came up.
He just needed that reassurance.
That's right.
That he could click his heels at some point and go back home.
Exactly. And I think a lot of us did. We may not always remember it.
Right.
But there's that
yearning for that
yeah.
kind of conscious awareness of closeness with God.
Mm-hmm.
And so people have to get to that point. You know, I was just thinking, you know, you were talking about that man in the lotus position, and and people do come in and they sit that way. I don't have a problem with it.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying the idea that it's not about separating yourself from your life. For me, a definition of a person who's a saint is not someone who goes and lives in a cave and says, om. It's the person who goes and lives among people.
Right.
And somehow manages to find grace. In all of that.
And there are a lot of them.
Yes.
I think your mother's one of them.
Yes, I think my mother is pretty much the closest thing I know.
She really? That's something coming from a daughter, too.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think when you're in the midst of feeling triggered in your life about things, it's good to remember that there's the true reality of a situation as much as possible, and to ask God, oh, is this in my highest and best good? Is this in the highest and best good of others? You know, is this going to help me proceed on my, along my path, spiritual path? And that really starts to ground a person.
I think so, too. And you know, the whole idea not to ever make light of somebody losing a child at all. And to go back to Edith Wendling, who I spoke of earlier, she was born a twin in the early 1880s. And she was the sickly one. In fact, she said her family said they put her in a shoebox because she was so tiny, and they expected her to die, so they would have buried her.
Right.
You know? And she said her sister was the totally healthy one. They expected to live 3 days afterwards. Her sister just left the body, died. And she had no memory of it. Of course, she was a newborn. When she was in her late 30s, 37, she was traveling through Kansas, and they had spiritualist churches in those days in Kansas. And she said they stopped for a Sunday service, and when the mediumship part came, this woman, she said she was a very robust, very outspoken kind of lady, and she said, I'm looking for so-and-so's sister, and I don't remember her twin's name. And she wasn't thinking about the twin that died 3 days after she was born.
Sure.
And the woman marched down from the podium and came right up to her and looked her in the eye and said, and shook her finger at her and said, why are you denying your sister? And she said, oh, my gosh, I just remembered, you know. And she said, your sister is here to tell you that you didn't want to come back. You were afraid to come back and do what you wanted to do. And so I promised I would bring you back here so that you wouldn't have to come by yourself. But our agreement was that I got to go home as soon as you got here safely.
Oh, wow.
When I get chills even now telling that story. And she said it changed everything for her about how the reality of, and I got to go home because my job was done.
Right. Isn't that, so she just needs to have someone hold her hand.
Right.
For that little bit.
Isn't that an amazing
What a special spiritual example of this.
I'm sure it didn't help the grief of her parents, but it in any way, who were already long gone. But
it might have helped her with her own guilt that she lived.
Yes.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
That was okay. That was the plan.
And the word from her sister that this is a place to come and visit, and I got to go home.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And that, you know, this is temporary while we're here.
Right.
It absolutely is. It's part of that experience. And it can be very healing for people to have that recognition. Now, of course, we are not allowed to go down the aisles to people.
No, we don't do that.
So don't expect that if you come. I think that sometimes it's those little nuggets that really help a person know that we're connected and that there's a web of existence. And while we do have free will, some things are helped along and manifested through group effort or partnered effort in life. And that's one of the ways that mediumship is healing. There's so many ways, like you're detailing in the examples that you're giving today, where mediumship has been healing for someone, where that is just the right thing that they have needed. And sometimes people don't realize the value of a message, a mediumship reading, until after.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, they're like, wow, I listened to the recording, and it just blew me away, because I was like, I didn't understand a few things when I was there, but then I was like, of course, oh, that's who it was. And I do have a person named that.
Isn't that awesome when that happens?
It starts to connect the dots, because just like Reverend Wendling, when she was like a deer caught in the headlights, she was not thinking of that person.
Exactly.
And that even, to my mind, helps with the authenticity of things, sometimes the first person who comes through is not the person that you expected would come through.
Yeah.
And it's not about the mediums are reading your mind. We're right there in the moment with you, seeing who's going to talk.
And also, we don't summon people up from spirit. They come,
they have to
agree. You've got a cell phone, you answer your cell phone. Sometimes you're too busy. Sometimes you don't want to talk.
Right.
And my dad, when he passed, he had been very sick for 8 months, and he was lying in the hospital bed and in my parents' family room, and my mother was sitting next to him, and he breathed his last breath, and out came blue-violet smoke and reformed like a Harry Potter manifestation on the other side of the bed, and they talked for about a half an hour. And the thing is he appeared that way to her, told her then he loved her and he had to go, and he disapparated and went across the room and up the chimney. An hour and a half later, when I got there and I walked in, there was this husk which didn't look like him at all. And standing in front of the fireplace was my father, the way he looked 25 years before, in the tuxedo he had owned then, not the one he was being buried in, and both sets of grandparents, and they were shimmering in light.
Nice.
And shortly after that, my brother and my husband saw the same thing. Now, here he appeared to all of us that way.
Mm-hmm.
After that, he wasn't around for years. Years. You know, you would think, and I figured, well, Dad's busy. He's busy. And then he popped in once in a while because he was always in his own religion as well as being involved in martial arts and TM and things like that. You know, he was always a seeker.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I didn't bemoan, oh, nobody's bringing my father through, or I can't receive anything from him. What's wrong, or why isn't he connecting with me? No, he's busy.
Yes, people have lives.
Yeah. Even in spirit, you know?
Well, sometimes people will ask, well, what is so-and-so up to? And so I'll say, well, they're busy doing blah, 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 and then they have to go and visit your sister who's having all this problem. And, people are kept busy.
Right.
And
they don't sit on clouds.
No, strumming a harp.
No, I don't think so.
It's so much more interesting. Now, some people, are they going through heavy life review? Absolutely.
Right.
But a lot of people get through that, and they're in a different kind of understanding, and if they desire to, they will connect with people on the earth plane. And for some, it's easier than others.
Right.
But I'm glad that you recognized that it wasn't a snub.
No, and I think it's helped me help people, as well, because our experiences we can sometimes share.
Mm-hmm.
And how many times have you looked at a text or a voicemail you've listened to and, oh, I'll call later, or mm-hmm. I'm too busy now because I'm in the middle of something, but I'll make a mental note of it.
Yes.
And why shouldn't it, as above, so below, as below, in some ways.
No, sometimes can you ask for someone? Absolutely.
Yes.
And if they're available, ready, willing, whatever, they will try to be there. Some of them are still learning the ropes, but, they will do their best to show up for your appointment in that time. Sometimes we have to clear the way from the other people in the room. Move aside, let somebody else in, and that happens too. But the thing to keep in mind is the communication being a two-way street. How often are you very, 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 very busy in your own life and filling your day with all kinds of things that if you were to set aside time and make an appointment with them yourself in meditation and prayer time, that they would show up.
And
so you can't just think that they're going to bust down a wall like the Kool-Aid Man and let you know that I'm here, like the big grand entrance or something. You have to let, sometimes it's going to be subtle. It's going to be, I'm here. And then about the time you're starting to think about it, they're gone.
Exactly.
And so it was just a quick, I love you text, as it were.
Right.
That you're receiving. And it can be very healing to have those little touch-ins with them yourself. And it can also be wonderful to have a more lengthy conversation with them. Usually with a medium, you can have a more sustained communication. I've noticed a lot of clients say, well, you're able to talk to them longer than I can.
And that's just practice.
Yeah.
That's because we do it so often.
Practice and kind of gear up for that mind, body, spirit to assist.
And I'm always happy when somebody comes for the first time and they come just to find out what it's about.
Right.
You know, and some people say, oh, you know, they're not serious about this. Well, why should they be serious about this? You know, when I went for my first formal reading, even though my grandfather had been coming to me since I was five, you know, we went to this spiritualist minister in just outside of Buffalo and Lackawanna, Reverend Mary Dunkel, and we were so excited. We were in 10th grade, and we were going to have our fortunes told. Oh, we were so excited.
This is not about that.
Of course not. but we didn't know that.
Right.
And she was so gracious. She was so kind, and she just chuckled. She said, well, this isn't exactly about having your fortune told.
Right.
But she didn't take offense. She didn't, you know, scold us. We were kind of tourists and just looking at the lay of the land, and look at what happened to me. I thought I was just going to get my fortune told, and I've spent over 50 years
it's
now
the farthest
talking
thing
to
from
dead
it.
People.
Yeah. Right? It's so funny how people have that expectation. But, you know, if you don't have someone in spirit, I would suggest you do not have a reading. And, in fact, I've dissuaded people from having readings because of that. I said, well, you know, this is what I do. And if that's not what you're looking for, you'll need to find another practitioner, as it were.
So, right.
Because I think that there is value for someone as a tourist, as you said. But that we want to do with people who know their folks in spirit,
right,
and can understand the verifiable parts of those things. So I think that's important for them to have that. Growing up in the family I did, I never felt the least impulse to have a reading.
Well, your mother's
because
a medium.
I didn't need to have that because I would get my own connections with people in spirit. So. But I understand other people, they need that as a resource, and
right. That
is something that is really valuable and very healing for them in their lives. And for the people who don't know someone, then later on when they have had a passing, when they're ready, it's as if their soul is ignited in those moments, and they're suddenly very receptive to communication with their loved ones of spirit. They feel that intense desire to stay in that bond of love with someone.
Yeah, there's a real need there.
A real need and a real healing. I think some wonderful examples. I know we just have a few minutes left because time's been going by. It does. What are some other ways that you think of mediumship as healing? We've given a lot of examples today.
Oh, there's so many.
I know.
Also, the sense of humor that they have in spirit.
Yes.
You know, that will come through. There was a couple I read for whose son had died by being murdered.
Mm-hmm.
And a long time ago, I told spirit, don't show me the gore, just tell me what they need to hear.
Mm-hmm.
And so I couldn't see the faces of the two people who were there, but I saw an arm raise up, and as the gun went off to shoot this young man who was only 21,
mm-hmm.
and he had already told me that, I was looking from behind his eyes, and he popped out of his body before the gun went off, and he was standing to the left of his grandfather with his hand in his grandfather's. And he had this self-depreciating humor. He had this gleam of humor as well as disbelief in his eyes. And he said to me, well, looking at that body, he said, it sure showed me that all the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put that body together again, and he was grinning with his grandfather's hand and his. His parents cracked up through their tears, burst out laughing, and said, "That is so our son's
humor."
Humor.
Yes.
And so, you know, it's humor. It's not all serious.
That's true. I've many times will tell people I'm a joyful medium. I'm laughing. I'm in the moment with you. And it, that laughter does help to break through some of the grief that could be so entangling.
Yeah.
But then it also raises that vibration. It keeps everybody in the room kind of into that up space that's very, that helps to facilitate that conversation with spirit. If a person's upset and the energy goes into this drag zone, then it's so much more effort to have a communication. It's like trying to talk to somebody who's underwater.
Right, because they come in that vibration of love.
Right, but if you're in that uplifted space and the humor and their personality really starts to shine and to heal people, and it's as if these deep wounds start to heal from the inside out within them, so that they start to feel with each breath sometimes, or in those moments they feel complete healing, or maybe it's after the reading that the healing of that finishes up, and then they're able to move forward into beautiful ways in their life, to not just honor the person who has passed, but to honor their own life, their own existence here, and that has been reaffirmed by the messages from spirit and the love that is still so present with them in that room, in that reading, and that they carry forward with them as they go out.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Very powerful.
It is.
What occurs, the healing. And so some people would say, well, is mediumship healing, or is healing mediumship? Because, you know, with spiritual healing, the way we do it here, we are allowing that energy of the divine to course through us to the person that's sitting on the bench to receive the healing. And so that idea of the channeling of the energy is very much like mediumship.
That's right.
But then mediumship is healing.
It's verbal healing,
it's
I
verbal
think.
Healing. Yeah. It's energetically healing.
And for those of you who are out there studying this and developing it, I can't encourage you enough to heal yourself as you go along. We don't have to be perfect. We're, you know, works in progress, all of us. And at the same time, the more we clear the space within us, the more that we focus on our own spiritual growth and how we manifest it and what we do and how we do what we do every day, the more clarity we'll have for the people where it won't bump into our stuff.
That's right.
And we can look past that and move beyond it so that our own filters become clear.
This is true. This is very true. You want to do that, and there's so much as a medium that you have to put aside to do the work, right?
Yeah.
And so it's nice that if you don't have to put too much aside. It's good if you don't have to say, well, that might be me, not them. It's good if you have done your clearing work as much as possible. Now, does spirit use your experiences to assist the client? Absolutely. Absolutely. That's all part and parcel of it. But by having done the healing within yourself, you'll be able to help them heal all the more. So as Elaine was explaining, it's not about being perfect. It's just about getting to that place where you're no longer so wounded yourself that you can't see how to help another person.
And those challenges, those lessons, those woundings are what give us compassion for other people as well.
Yes, yes. And so you have to be in that space of compassion to do, in my opinion, to do the work well. Now, some people would say, you know, you need to be as objective as possible and, you know, be stoic and give a reading as if you're talking to a person who's just on the other side of the wall that you can't get any kind of emotion from. But to me, a reading is very much an interactive experience.
I agree.
And it's like we have just jumped in this together. And we are in the thick of it together. And to me, there's something very powerful that goes on. And I, you know, I get a vicarious thrill for the love that is shared in those moments.
Yeah.
And so I can't imagine being so apart from it.
Clinical.
And
well,
clinical.
And is it about the facts? Or, and that's F-A-C-T-S, not F-A-X. Is it... Just in case it wasn't clear. Is it about the facts or is it about healing where the facts are true?
Yeah.
You know, and I know I'm going to date myself unless you watched it at Nick at Night, but the old series Dragnet, he used to say, only the facts, ma'am, only the facts. And facts can give evidence, but they don't heal. It's that vibration that you're talking about, that love that you can feel from them to the person we're with, that it fills the room. And it's the energy that heals. It's the synergy between us and the client and us and spirit and them and their loved ones. And that's what this gift is about. It's not just about evidence.
Evidence is
part of the healing, but evidence without love is an empty shell.
That's right. And I have to say, I would rather feel something than just have a cold, hard picture of it all. I'd rather feel the hug and feel that personality, the essence of the person in spirit, than just this is their name and their what they look like it's a photograph.
I have one friend who is a medium who, when they studied with somebody, this person said, you know, gave them a name. And he said, I know my father's name. He said, what about my relationship with him? And it was like, no, only the facts. And so he said, no, I need more than facts for healing.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, tell me about what my father has to say about our relationship.
Yes.
And so it's the dynamics of being human, not a data sheet. It's not data.
That's right. And if you take nothing else away from today's show, it is that mediumship is healing because of the relationship.
Because of the relationship and that. And the facts are part of it, not the whole thing.
That's right. That's absolutely right. So that's bold, italicized, and underlined.
And we admit we're rather biased.
Oh, of course. So you're getting our true blue opinions about these things. But I think when people have had readings with us, that's what they have felt.
Right.
They have felt the authenticity of the moment.
Oh, that's a beautiful way of putting it.
Yes. And so that is what lives in them, that was a healing experience for them.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're whether you're having your own mediumship experiences with your loved ones in spirit, or you're developing as a medium, or you're a medium already, you certainly is a crucial part of what we provide, is we're facilitating, I should say, in our readings.
Well, thank you. Thank you for inviting me. I enjoy this. And I hope you enjoyed it.
Yes, we're so glad that you could join us for today. And thank you so much, Elaine. You're a beautiful resource. As you can tell, folks, I hope you really enjoyed Elaine today. And tune in next week for Wednesdays with Willa and in the weeks to come. Thank you so much, everyone. God bless and have a beautiful week. Bye-bye.